Hey, welcome to Dogs Are Smarter Than People. And we are so lucky because we have a bonus episode today with Martin Vidal. And Martin is brilliant and amazing and this just absolutely deep, holistic writer who's full of wisdom. And I've only recently gotten to know Martin, but like, fangirling right now because his brain is so cool, and we're so lucky to have him with us today. So Martin, welcome. Do you want to say anything about yourself? Do you want to say how you're so incredibly brilliant and amazing and such a good writer?
Wow, I feel bad for the listeners that after that amazing introduction now they have to hear me talk.
No.
But thank you for that, and thank you for having me on. I mean, not too much to say. I'm a full-time writer. I write everything under the sun. I mean, you know how it goes. You're incredibly prolific. So I got newsletter going, Medium, Instagram, and of course the books. So I spend my time doing that. I'm big time inspired by philosophers. So that's sort of what I try to write in. But I don't know. Philosophy sometimes feels like a dead art, and you know, people don't want to hear you ramble about your thoughts. But what are you going to do except what you love?
You have in your two books, you have this beautiful accessibility that happens. You know, like a lot of people hear the word poet or they hear the word philosopher or philosophy, and they think, oh, pretentious. And they're almost afraid of it. You know, like I think sometimes it makes us harken back to like when we're in second grade or fifth grade or eighth grade, and there was something at school that our brain just didn't get or would just bore us. But what you managed to do through all your influences is take these very big ideas and present them in this beautiful, flowing, there's like a sense of authority to your work, but it is an accessible authority almost. Like it's a, did you ever read like when you were a kid, the Desiderata, or like it was, there's just this beauty in the language in that mm-hmm. you have too. Oh. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for that. I mean, it's always been a concern for me because like, I feel like I'm not interested in any small ideas, right? So like, it's always the big stuff. And then I feel like it's been like one of the difficulties. I feel like, you know, from a marketing perspective, I feel like brevity is very much necessary. So like, you know, I try to run an Instagram or a Twitter and it's like, you try to put an excerpt or something and it's like, it needs to be 3 pages long. Cause you know, I'm always like trying to touch on some really large topic. So to hear you say that means a lot, honestly, because that's one of the fears I have, that it won't be like easily digestible because it is so involved. But, you know, I do try. It's a lot of iteration.
You do, though. You know? You do. Like, it's just this, it's gorgeous. It's a skill. I remember when I was in college, I was a political science major, which no one ever thinks makes any sense.
I actually was, too.
What? No way. Were you really?
Yeah.
No wonder I love you. Okay, so one of the chairman of the department at my college was like, the thing that most people can't do is take that big complex political theory and like hone it down into something that enters into people's hearts or minds or intellects. And I really truly believe that you have that always stayed with me because like skill, I want that. But you truly do that. And what made you, did you start off on Medium and then move to books, to your books? Or where did you start really becoming a full-time writer, Martin?
Yeah. So I had always written in the background of my life. And it's funny because basically I started writing this really big book when I was like 17. Just sort of, you know, like a hubristic young guy. I was trying to explain like human behavior in a big way. It's like 500 pages long now. It's still nowhere near done. So around like 25 or so, I'd had like a quarter life crisis, which, you know, aww, I credit my generation for inventing, but who knows? And
it's a good
so
I have it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it happens. Yeah.
So it was rough. Yeah. I won't get into everything that came with that. But one of the good things, I think, was that I finally said, like, you know, I've always wanted to be a writer, always considered myself a writer, and I've never published anything. So I said, let me take a year off from this and write something that I think I can get done a little bit faster. And it actually flowed very naturally, because the inspiration behind the Ambition Handbook, which isn't a subject that I would never have found myself in, I don't think, except that that quarter life crisis brought me to say, like, what's wrong with me that I can't get things complete? So it started with more of self-exploration, and then it developed into a book from there. And, you know, after a year, it felt pretty complete, to be honest. I mean, it's never done. I still have to add another, at least half a chapter. And I've been doing that the whole time it's been published. I mean, I don't mark the editions, but there's probably like 30 of them if it were actually done, because it just never ends. But so I published the book, and then I got on Medium. Or at least I had written it like a year before getting on Medium. I tried sending it to publishers. Nobody bit. So then I think actually around the time I got on Medium is when I self-published. And that since then, sense. I've just been going all in on it.
And you lit up Medium too, by the way.
Oh, thank you. I don't know
about that,
but people on there are so sweet. I mean, I love it. I feel like there's so much I would have never been able to put out in a different environment.
I think that's really true. You know, before we started recording, we were talking about how I started writing poems on Medium, which is how we met. And for me, when you were talking about Instagram, I was like, I started trying to do it on Instagram, but I just couldn't do it on Instagram. Yeah, it's really hard. I'm so impressed by people like you who can, because I just, I couldn't condense it enough. I'm too wordy. You can tell by my speech that I'm wordy. But like, yeah, it's just, Medium is a really lovely place that I hadn't realized until recently. And it's, you have some great stuff on there, which I'll talk about in a second. But going back to the Ambition Handbook and how it has, like, it's all about, like, self-examination and self-transformation. And I love how it's, like, this more holistic look, again, going back, about, like, how to find success rather than the worst of Medium articles, maybe, like, a listicle, or you know what I mean? Just reiteration of other people's ideas over and over again. It's nothing like that. And I think that's part of the joy that I found in it. And it also made me think about how we as writers, and also as humans, decision-making and the choices that we take, like, that seems to really matter to you. Can you speak a little bit to that? You know,
it really does. So sort of the advent of, like, my interest in philosophy was from Nietzsche. Like, I picked up Nietzsche's The Gay Science as a teenager. It's funny, I was grounded. That's the only reason I started reading. And I picked it up, and I mean, honestly, from the first page, like, I was looking at the people around me. I was like, do they know, like, that this exists? And so existentialism, I took very much to be, like, freedom from established values. And the primary functional point I took from that was, like, you can't really judge anyone ever. And that segued into my own interest for psychology. So when I look at decision making, I mean, I find it difficult, honestly, to see where the blame lies in any choices a person makes. It's like, you know, if it's from our intellect, it's like we're sort of born with this level or that of, like, awareness. If it's from our emotions, I think we're all bound to these, like, three or four emotions that guide us whether or not we want them to. And it all seems very blameless to me. So I think in order to just find everyone, to be able to accept everyone and to, you know, accept myself, like, it's become a very deep point of interest. And so pretty much anything I write, I feel like, goes back to behavior and decision making for that reason.
Oh, that makes sense. You know, that makes a lot of sense. We have this thing that we do sometimes on Fridays called Be Brave Fridays, where we try to share other people's bravery stories, like stories where, you know, like they step out of their comfort zone or the box that they put themselves in, the box of maybe those three emotions or the scripts that we run through our heads since we were a child. Like, you're not artistic, you're not this, you are this, and how those become so ingrained in who we are that oftentimes we don't take that step back and try to figure out if that's who we really even want to be, you know, that transformation. And the stories can be little and they can be small and they can be huge. But I was thinking about you, and you've already said, like, an event in your life where you took, you made that decision and you took that chance and you're like, I'm going to try to write this instead of this. And like, do you find a lot of those moments in your life? Have they happened more after your quarter life crisis? Like, do they?
Yeah, definitely. It's been interesting. Like, it's been a whole progression, right? It's like you dip your toe into the bravery pool a little bit and then it gets a little bit easier and you move further and further. There's like some pieces I've posted on Medium. That's really been my place for bravery, I feel like, in terms of writing. And I think it's because, you know, I love that format of an article because it's so free, because it's so small. You're not just bound to some theme for 200 pages, you know?
Yeah.
But I mean, coming clean about like my social anxiety, like when I pressed post on that, I broke out into a sweat, like instantly. There's another one about why writing takes courage, and I'm not sure why, but I felt so vulnerable around that piece. Yeah, I think it was just touching on all of like the sort of insecurities of like being a writer, and there are a lot. I mean, I'm sure.
So many. You know,
well, so
yeah, there's tons.
Things like that. I mean, I think you just got to trust people at the end of the day that what you experience is what they experience, and I think to me that's the ultimate like encouraging fact.
That makes sense. That makes a lot of sense, and you know, I always have a harder time being vulnerable and having that anxiety happen, not in a writing way versus a stage fright, social anxiety way for me. But that when it's, you know, something really deep that I care so passionately about in poems, but also, you know, like if I'm writing about justice or about kindness, or there's certain themes that always seem to make my heart hitch a little bit when I'm writing about them, you know, and I can see that vulnerability being a place of anxiety for you and for so many of us, you know, because we're putting often, if we're being authentic and honest, putting our hearts right out there, you know, that can be scary and brave.
Yeah. I mean, definitely. It's like, it's funny because some of the people in my personal life have been offended because I've posted on Medium, or even like I've finished a book and like I don't want to tell people I know personally because it becomes a little bit too real. It's like you know, and it almost muddies the process a little bit because I'm writing it and I write a line and I think about what they're going to think about it, you know, and sort of like not having that pressure helps, but they don't seem to get it.
I was teaching a class at the Writing Barn, which is online. But it, there's like these great people in there. And it was our first class Tuesday. And one of the students was looking at one of the other students and she was like, wait, are you this Leah age? And like, she's like, did you write this book? And she held up the book that she had gotten at the library that day. It was like a middle grade book. And Leah age was like, yes. And it's like her whole life, like she was like, thank you for reading that book, but I want to hide now. Like, it was just that, you know, like it's a celebration, but also like I wrote this, I got this out, this story, but also that vulnerability when you have to see people face to face who are reading your work. It's like,
definitely. It's funny. I was actually like working on an article thinking about like the dynamic between introversion and extroversion in writing, because it's like, all right, writing is a perfect place for an introvert, right? Until you want to have a career, I feel like.
That's
and then all of a sudden, it's like, you know, you got to do things that like rock stars are doing. Like, you got to show up to events and speak in public. And it's like, this is so against like, me. Like, I don't understand how I got here from like sitting alone at home thinking about something.
It's if you ever get sent on like a big book tour, it is the weirdest experience. It's beautiful, but it's the weirdest experience in your life because you'll meet people and sometimes they'll cry. Or they'll give you presents, or and then you'll like go up on stage and there'll be like, you know, 1,000 people. Sometimes there'll be no one, but sometimes there'll be 1,000 people. And publishers, like traditional publishers, they don't tell us how to do that. Like you don't get like, hey, they just
put you out there.
No, hey, little introverted author, this is what you do. Mm-hmm. You're on the great big stage, and it's so scary, and it's not a skill set that most of us expect that we're supposed to have. Like, hey, how do you talk on a podcast? Or hey, how, if you're a children's book writer, how do you keep fifth graders paying attention to you for 40 minutes when you're on a stage? Like, it's really weird. And some authors have such a hard time. Like, they can't, like, breakdowns and, you know, so much anxiety. And it's just painful for some of us to do. But
I mean,
yeah,
it's, I mean, it sounds, you know, it's a major goal to get to that level. But yeah, I'm sure it will be like the crucible. I mean,
no, you'll rock it. Hard. You're gonna rock it. And you'll,
thank you for your faith.
I believe in you so much, Martin. You can adapt to anything. You're smart. So you're capable. You're great. Don't you worry. I'll be like your personal cheerleader whenever you have to go anywhere. I
appreciate that.
Okay.
Stumble through it.
No, you got this. I wanted to quickly talk about the flower garden too, because that's releasing soon, right?
Yes.
Soon. And I got a sneak peek, and it's just this lovely sauntering through the moments of humanity is how I think of like this book. Like, it's just like you touch on so much, like narcissism and grief and love and all these things that matter. Can you tell me, or tell all of us actually, how you moved from the ambition handbook over to the flower garden?
Like, it's funny. Because the ambition handbook is really the one that was like out of my direct path or interest, I feel like.
Yeah.
Like, and it's weird to have your first book be like the one-off. And I kind of, I don't know, you know, some people tell me they love that. They're so excited for the next one. I'm like, well, you know, don't get too excited. Like, I don't know. I don't want to disappoint you because it's totally different. But yeah, the Flower Garden is like totally me. Honestly, the book is like selfish. Like, it's completely idiosyncratic. I don't think I thought about anyone else or what they wanted to hear when I wrote it. It was just points of interest for me, questions I wanted to investigate about human behavior or about how we should go about things.
Yeah.
A lot of it was things I wanted to say to people, but never really felt comfortable saying out loud. So, but yeah, the Ambition Handbook is, I mean, it kind of like, I almost felt like, I don't know, like I never wanted to write a self-help book. You know, like, I feel like in some ways they've got like a dirty name in the industry.
Yeah.
I always wanted to write a book on philosophy. So I try to say like, it's a philosophical book about self-help.
Yeah,
I think the Ambition Handbook is definitely going to be the one-off in terms of what I spend most of my time writing. And it's going to be more in line with Flower Garden, or maybe a little bit more sciencey into neuroscience and stuff like that.
Oh, that would be fun.
Yeah, that's what really interests me, is psychology.
Really?
And
cognitive neuroscience is like my big.
It's incredible.
I love it so much. Mind. Yeah, me too, which is funny because it's cognitive neuroscience, but whatever. Yeah. You're losing your mind over. But, I'm sorry.
Maybe you'll find it while you're there too.
Yeah. Exactly. But that is exciting to me. I can't wait to see, like, watch your career and your writing grow and move, and what is next. It's really cool, Warren. It's gonna be so cool.
I can live up to some of those expectations.
No pressure. You're just gonna be cool. It's all fine. You got it. You just naturally got it. You're good.
Appreciate
I promise.
That.
Okay. So you have this great, you have the story, and I think it's Social Anxiety Made Me Who I Am, which I vaguely referenced earlier. And in that story, you have this really great memory that I think might like strike a chord for all of us. And and I think that a lot of writers especially can relate to. And it was when you were 9 years old and you did your first creative writing experiment, I mean, assignment, the teacher told you all to write a paragraph that started with, "I found an egg in the yard," and you had 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. And I think you said that I wrote 3 pages. I would have gladly continued writing more. Whereas my anxiety had muzzled me, the written word flowed out in a torrent. The teacher loved my writing so much, she insisted on reading it aloud. Once again, I went to hide in the bathroom when she did. And I was just like, oh, yes, that's what we're talking about too already.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and that... I can't wait to read your piece about that push and pull of introversion and extroversion mm-hmm. in writing and in writers too, because you want to communicate, but
yeah,
then you hear it out loud and it's scary.
It's been a big theme. I mean, even now, like, I don't want to read it out loud. I don't want to, like, you know.
Yeah, and I just did it to you too.
You know, honestly, that was fine. I was thinking, okay. I was like, why isn't this making my heart? Like, I don't know. I think maybe I feel very comfortable with you because normally it would, like, in either way, it's something I need to get used to, right? Like, if I want a writing career, it's going to have to be, I'm going to have to read it out loud. And I'm sure hear other people read excerpts and things like that. But it's really strange, right? If, like, you tense up and you're unable to talk about people, to hear your words coming through someone else's voice, because it's like, I'm now speaking by proxy. It was a very uncomfortable experience when I was young, but at the same time, it was sort of what made me feel like, oh, you know, like, people like this, like, I can do something. Set the ball rolling.
When I was a little kid, I had a similar experience. I was in second grade. I have a goofy voice, which you get to hear because you're talking to me, but it was even goofier. I had, like, this Canadian accent, but I grew up in mm-hmm. New Hampshire. And then my dad, like, had New York words. I slurred my S's and I'd mm-hmm. be like, ah, that's schmaltzy. And nobody would know what I was saying, like a kindergarten kid. And so I got tormented all the time. I just stopped talking, right? And nobody in mm-hmm. school knew about was smart or was dumb because everybody kept teasing me. And then I got into second grade and there was a teacher, Mrs. Sneerson, and which is a horrible name if you can't say S's. And she had an assignment for us and it was like, write a haiku, first one done. You know, you get to go out to recess early, just make it one sentence. Do not write about war or Tonka trucks or whatever. I don't know. Barbies. Make it about nature. Here are the syllables. Do it. And I was like, okay. And I was like, first one outside. Yeah. because I was really shy too, and I never got the swings. We had a limited amount of swings. And I did it, and I went outside and played and came back in. And Mrs. Sneerson was like, Carrie, you're the only person who did this right. And I was like, what? And what does that even mean? I don't care. And she was like, Carrie, we had no idea you were smart. And, which is a horrible thing for a teacher to say. But I was just like, mixed bag. Yeah, kind of like you. And then she put my poem on the wall for parent teacher conference day and all this stuff. Mm. And all of a sudden, like, writing gave me something where I had a voice, where I had taken away my voice because I was so afraid of the bullies. And it's kind of, you know, not quite the same as that anxiety, but there's some similar patterns there between. Mm-hmm. And I think that writing gives a lot of us a new way to communicate that feels most mm-hmm. of the time a little bit better, where we can be heard and we can control in mm-hmm. that environment on the page or the screen what people are hearing without mm-hmm. getting interrupted, unless you're in the podcast.
No, it's funny. It's I think it's like a bridge, right? Or like a softer like method. Like, you can do it and it still gets there without, you know, your heart beating in your ears while you're saying it, or, you know, you're completely lost in your own head while you're trying to talk.
You had a line. Oh, sorry.
Oh, no, go ahead, please.
You had a line in that same article, essay on Medium, mm-hmm. About social anxiety, where you talk about how it's not even, it's like something malfunctioning inside of you. And mm-hmm. it's not that you're afraid of people, which I'm not either, but like your body is like, I think you physically said that it tightens up. And when you're feeling anxious, and to me, that was like an epiphany moment in that article mm-hmm. too. I was like, ah, oh, that's brilliant. And what a good way to say it.
Yeah. It's funny. Cause like, I feel like there's a lot of assumptions if you suffer from social anxiety that you have to be timid or maybe you lack confidence or, you know, like just a lot of things as if it's a part of you. And it never really felt that way to me. Like I have a kind of like boisterous, carefree personality, honestly, but not around people, you know, like not in a crowd. So it was very important to me to make that distinction that, like, you know, it informs who you are, certainly, right? Like, it determines a lot of your experiences. I think it, you know, I mean, right now I feel like a major point of empathy for us is that shared experience, right?
Yeah, right.
So that'll change how we think about things. But I don't like to be labeled by it. I don't want, you know?
Yeah, me either. Yeah. I like to choose my own labels. It's just so interesting. And you also had this quote somewhere, I think in your latest piece, about mm-hmm. how, but it might not be, and I apologize. But it was, you were just kind of like, you know what? I have a really hard time with that quote about bravery being the absence of fear. And that got mm-hmm. me super excited about the Nelson Mandela quote. That's courage mm-hmm. is not the absence of fear, but the triumph over it. And the brave mm-hmm. man is not he who does not feel afraid, but he who conquers fear. And that quote really resonated with me when I was thinking about you and your whole mm-hmm. body of work and the choices that you've made to do this writing thing that so many people long to do, Martin. Like, you're a mm-hmm. full-time writer. That's a big deal, you know? Yeah.
It's great coming from you. I feel like your career is like incredible. I can't even imagine its magnitudes. Thank you.
Very sweet.
So much.
Oh my gosh. Thank you for being brave and being like, hey, I'll read her poem. Hey, I'll be on her podcast.
Your poems kindest. Are a gift. Absolutely. Oh,
dude, you're a gift. You're a gift. Do you want to pimp anything out before we hang up? I feel like I've taken up so much of your time, but I just listened to you talk forever.
I mean, I feel like, no, not at all. I mean, I feel like online, I won't shut up. So if anyone's interested in hearing what I have to say, they can check me out on Medium. You know, it's all just my name, Martin Vidal, or my website, martinvidal.co. Same thing, Instagram. And of course, Flower Garden is coming out in a few weeks. Though, you know how it is. I feel like trying to work out those last little issues. So, you know. Hopefully in a few weeks. And I'd like people to check that out if they have any interest in what they heard described here today.
Oh, they definitely should. Definitely. Martin, I am glad and lucky that I got to meet you online and now via podcast. You are a great gift.
I feel absolutely the same way for meeting you.
Aww. You're a great gift to this world, mister. Like, I'm really, really impressed by who you are and your art and your brain and your intellect.
Thank you.
It shines so right through, man. Thank you for listening, everybody. And thanks for Martin for being here. The podcast notes will be at carriejonesbooks.blog and everywhere else. And I'll have links to Martin's stuff, and you should definitely check him out. Thank you again, Martin.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks for listening to Dogs Are Smarter Than People bonus author to author, writer to writer interviews. I hope you'll check out the regular Dogs Are Smarter Than People everywhere podcasts are found, or me, Carrie Jones, at Carrie Jones Books, CarrieJones, books.blog, for writing tips, life tips, and all around weirdness. Have a great day.